And if we leave the ethics out, it's so much easier, right? So don't take that easy path, right? Bring that other side in and say, now what tweaks do we need to make? Now what needs to happen to make sure that we're still bringing betterment into the world?
Welcome to Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast from Dublin City University. I'm Ciarán Dunn.
I'm Giovinetti.
And I'm Tim Hannigan.
In this episode, we talk with Kelly Moran. Kelly has a background in anthropology and ethnographic research. She's worked in the International Peace Corps and as a consultant, and more recently works as a senior user experience researcher at Google. Kelly is also particularly interested in the topic of ethics, and specifically the relationship between ethics and creativity. And this is precisely the theme that we delve into in this conversation. So, Kelly, thanks a million for being on the Crania podcast today, all about how we can foster creativity in higher education. Perhaps just to start off, you'd like to give us some background about yourself and your interest in the field of creativity.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me. My name is Kelly Moran. I come from an academic background of anthropology. I have a master's in applied anthropology from the University of North Texas. And I also, in between my undergrad and my master's degree, I served in the United States Peace Corps and I served in Uzbekistan. So I took a little time, a little break in my educational pursuits to kind of get out there and see what things were like in the rest of the world. And I think that was highly important. And then during my final phase of education, I realized that I really wanted to be able to get back out into the world and bring value. And so I was attracted to the field of user experience. And so I'm now a senior user experience researcher at Google. I work on Google search and I have a lot of fun applying creativity in many ways and using that anthropological background as well. And I'm super excited to chat about how that comes into play.
Brilliant. Excellent. Thanks a million. And so our standard opening question is always around, you know, what one word would you personally associate with creativity and why is that the case?
Yeah, that one word would be open. Openness is important for creativity. It's essential for creativity. The more you close yourself off to ideas or try and stop ideas before they really get started because you're worried about where they might lead, it's a really important part of creativity. Ethics then becomes essential to that openness as well, but you've got to have that openness first before you can let creativity in the door.
So I'm absolutely fascinated about, I'm really excited about talking about the ethical side of things. And I know that's an area you're particularly passionate about. But just first of all, on this idea of openness, how do you get people to be open? I mean, by being open, we're kind of, is there a vulnerability there? And if so, how do we encourage people to be open?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really great question, particularly in my field of user experience, because what I do is I talk to people about how they accomplish goals and tasks in their daily lives. And then we go back and we try and see how technology can help them with that. And it's essential for them to be open with me and thinking freely and really sharing. And so one of the things that you need to be open is some kind of comfort. But you mentioned that vulnerability, which also comes into play, right? So you kind of need to be able to accept some vulnerability by feeling comfortable with the people that you're with. You can't be vulnerable in an environment where the people you're with feel judgmental or harsh or toxic in some way. And so you need to have connections with people. You need to be able to build those so that the vulnerability can feel safe and then the openness can come out.
Sure. And so that I imagine in an educational environment that a lot of that will be led by the facilitator, by the teacher, by the professor in creating their own kind of classroom culture, I suppose, that normalizes these things.
Right. Absolutely. Students need to feel comfortable not only asking questions, but also bringing up their own takes on ideas. So a professor who shuts down a new line of thinking is going to have a class that's very quiet, and they're going to simply regurgitate material on the exam, and they're not going to play with the material in any kind of interesting way. They're not going to be likely to bring in new, amazing ideas. You know, one of the things that I love is being able to serve as a mentor and coach people, and they come up with ideas for things that I've been doing the same way for many years, and they'll try something different. And it's fascinating to see how they'll be able to draw new insights out of a project that I wouldn't have gotten because I've gotten set in my way. And so that creativity, that openness, that facilitation to let people say different things is critical to grow in education or in any field.
And as well as that is the idea of, I think you touched on it there, of having multiple or diverse perspectives within a certain group so that people can say, well, have you thought about it doing it this way, or I would do it that way, so that you have the kind of almost the interdisciplinarity that acts as the fuel for creative outputs.
Yeah, exactly. Having different types of people from different backgrounds, whether that be, you know, geographical backgrounds or disciplinary backgrounds or socioeconomic backgrounds or what have you, bringing in those different points of view and perspectives and allowing them to thrive and intermingle will facilitate that creative environment.
Okay. And so right now I want to get stuck into the ethics thing because I'm really interested in this side of things. So we know most, even though we don't have one single universal definition of creativity, we do know that there tends to be this recurring theme around that there are two fundamental criteria, one of which is perceived novelty, so how new or how original something is, and one of which is perceived value, how, and doesn't have to be economic value, so the meaningfulness of something, the appropriateness of it. And that they seem to be the two criteria that are used all the time. But I know that you're really interested and passionate about the area of ethics and the idea of the relationship between ethics and creativity. So ethics being the science of morality, I guess, and, you know, how we respond to the question, what should I do or what should be done in any given context? Mm-hmm. So there is this idea that perhaps we should have a third criterion for creativity, and that might be an ethical one. So I'm really interested in unpacking this with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a lot of thinking on this. And to give you the background of how I came to this topic of ethics in creativity, remember that I came through the discipline of anthropology. And so in that field, we do what is considered by the universities as human subject research. Even though as anthropologists, we don't really think about doing experiments on people, we're more in an observational role, but it is technically human subjects research. And so we are held to an ethical standard in that particular field, as are the other social sciences, sociology, psychology, for example. And so there's an ethics component in every course that we take, every class we took. There was some component somewhere in the first couple of weeks of the course where we would talk about potential ethical problems that may come up in our work and how do we deal with them and what are procedures for that. So I was very much trained to think about ethics in every piece of work that I did. And then professionally, as I moved into the field of user experience, which is a highly creative field where creativity is very much held in high regard, considered very essential. There was particularly a time period where we would talk about rock stars in the field, which is very creative and innovative. And I began feeling a tension between the ethics and the creativity, where sort of anything goes and just try everything. And so I started to kind of explore those tensions on my own, and then was given an opportunity to speak at a group called Creative Mornings, which has worldwide chapters. And what Creative Mornings does is they bring in creative individuals who, first of all, they say everyone is creative, so it's sort of a wide open field, but they bring in people who they believe have shown examples of creativity. And every cycle, every month that they meet, worldwide, they have the same topic. And you get assigned the topic when you're ready to speak. And I was assigned the topic of ethics, which was very coincidental, but also, you know, one of those things that I think happens. And so I was being explicitly asked to talk about ethics to a creative group. And so I really started to dig in, and I started to look at what does ethics mean and what does creativity mean. And as you mentioned, creativity is hard to define. And that's part of the beauty of it, is that there aren't those boundaries around it. Creativity, I looked up, you know, lots of different attempts at defining it, and it really kind of centered around this idea of eschewing traditional beliefs or values and practices in order to bring something into being, whether that be an idea or an actual thing. It was bringing something forth that hadn't been there before. And so then I looked into the definition of ethics. Sometimes people get bogged down by the issue of legality. But ethics and legality are unfortunately not always connected. You can have one and not the other. So put legal aside, although always remember that as well as you go forward. But thinking about ethics, what they really are a set of guidelines. They're not laws, but they're guidelines or sort of instructions or general scriptures to keep in mind. And they're accepted by a group. There aren't really personal ethics. That's morality. If your personal morals, you have your group ethics. But you can, of course, disregard your group's ethics, but you know that they're there. And they're very contextual. One group's ethics is not another group's ethics. And you can find tension there when groups begin to interact and they have different guidelines for how to behave and how to interact. So it seems like creativity is this open bringing forth, pushing aside old things, and then ethics being this group adhered to guideline, things you should follow. It feels like this is a tension that cannot be resolved. How do you possibly keep them both in mind? It would just be impossible to exist in the same person. So those are the definitions. Those are the ways we try to describe them. And so when I see some kind of tension like this, and tension comes up a lot in the work that I do with user experience, trying to help people solve problems using the constraints of technology. You see a lot of tension there. I look towards the purpose. What is the purpose of creativity? And what is the purpose of ethics? What are they each trying to accomplish? And so when you look at creativity, you see that as something whose purpose is to make the world somehow easier, more interesting, more, you know, solving problems, making it better, really. You're bringing something forth to create this betterness. And
the idea of enriching the world at some
absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. People are not typically creative to destruct things. There is the idea of creative destruction, but generally creativity is about improving. Bringing in beauty and betterment and all of that. And so then you look at ethics. Why do we have ethics? Why do we bother with these? Well, it's about bringing in betterment, right? It's also trying to make sure that people are able to have gentler lives, have easier lives together. And so really they're both about bringing betterment into the world. And so they have to be able to play well together because they have the same ultimate goal. And so I brought this conversation to this Creative Mornings discussion and was wonderfully pleased to see the great reception. And have been chatting about ethics and creativity ever since and found that, yes, there was a tension there, but there's sort of a beauty in that tension, right? How do you achieve both of these things and bring your creativity to the problem of remaining ethical in your approach to whatever it is that you're bringing the creativity to? You're bringing creativity to your business problem, you're bringing creativity to your family dispute. And how do you bring in an ethical component as well?
I think that tension is really interesting because you have this kind of sense where, so both creativity and ethics are driven by this desire for betterment. But the mechanism through which they might achieve this betterment may vary, may be discrete insofar as we could argue that if ethics is a group, it's a group and a collective phenomenon, it could be around reducing uncertainty by providing structure. So we know, you know, ethics, this is right, this is wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And then creativity tends to be the idea of pushing boundaries on these structures. So you have this, yeah, I can really see the inherent tension, but also the complementarity that exists between them. It's a bit almost strikes me like the way you're describing it is, you know, conservatism versus liberalism, you know, that you have this kind of unchecked, unbounded liberalism of creativity, right? Just do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want. And it can be justified on the grounds that it's, that this is new and that it's different and it's adding value to certain people. And then you've got conservatism kind of saying, well, hold on, you know, is this in the interest of the greater good? Where we're talking about then, you know, consequentialism and utilitarianism. So that's really interesting. So then I see that there's both of them have this concept of betterment. Then how do you actually join them together in a tangible way around that?
Yeah. Well, so one of the things that I mentioned about the definition of ethics is that they're part of a group It's a group agreed upon thing. And so one thing that is important is for the group that you are part of or working with to have discussions about where will be our lines in the sand, where will we not want to cross into because we need to hold ourselves to these ethical standards. And so having some kind of group consensus is important. Sometimes these are formal conversations that are made. And for many groups, there are codes of conduct or other types of things that are written down and codified. And you, even in certain, when you participate in certain conferences now, you need to sign a code of conduct. And sometimes they're less formalized and they're more just sort of generally agreed upon in an unspoken way. When you get into something like academia, I believe it's important to have things written down and but still part of a conversation, right? So they need to be brought up as here's our lines in the sand. Here are the things that we will uphold. So that everyone in the group is in agreement and aware and knows when to be able to say to another, you know, this is an interesting thing that you're doing. However, I have a concern that it might be in breach of our code of conduct, right? It might have some ethical implications, and I'd love to discuss those with you because ethics are agreed upon and you need to be able to have those discussions. So bringing it out into the open is really important when you get into formalized groups.
And when you're talking about, so they need to be agreed upon and in certain contexts, they need to be kind of articulated very explicitly. And then in other contexts, they're a bit more implicit. I mean, from your perspective, are ethics, ought ethics be to be universal? You know, should we be at least espousing the idea of universal ethics, even if we haven't achieved it? Is that a pursuit? Is it a noble pursuit to look to trying to achieve universal ethics? I mean, that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights at some level is an attempt at universal ethics. What's your perspective on that?
I think that there are some things that can probably be universally agreed on, certain things in that we should protect, you know, not harming, not physically harming others. But as I mentioned, ethics are contextual as well. And I can give you an example. I mentioned that I had served in the U.S. Peace Corps in Uzbekistan. And in that role, I served as a teacher at, in the United States, it would be considered high school level. So kids that were 13 to 16 years old were my students. And I would tell them before exams, you know, remember kids, eyes on your own paper, don't cheat, because I had, you know, ethical belief that cheating is wrong. And of course they would say, you know, absolutely, Miss Kelly, of course we don't cheat. But then in the middle of the exam, students would stand up and walk over to another student and ask for the answer, and they would get it and they would go sit down again. And this was so frustrating to me. Because we had just had this discussion, right? Like I said, ethics should be talked about. But it was really just me telling them, don't cheat, right? And then here they were, you know, to my eyes, blatantly cheating. Well, going a little further into my experience living in another country, I realized that in Uzbekistan, the kids in the same class are in a cohort that stays together their entire lives. They start when they're little kids in the same neighborhood. They get placed into these classes very early on and stay in the same little group, 10 to 20 kids, throughout their whole educational career. And then things are very family oriented. They'll probably end up working at the same place together. And in that type of context, not helping your friend when you could is unethical. So to allow your friend to fail, how could you do that to them? And so they had a different context that their ethics was applied to. And my ethics of, you know, individual achievements, a very American thing, wasn't applicable to them. Because why would you let someone fail? It's going to bring down the whole group eventually. So sometimes trying to have universal ethics for everything doesn't take into account the individual or the group circumstances in different places that have completely different environments and realities.
So sometimes when I ask the question around or suggest that ethics might be a third criterion that should be applied in evaluating whether or not something is creative or how creative something is, I get pushback, you know, insofar as, you know, ethics is so subjective, as you were just talking, it's contextual. But then again, we can argue that, you know, perceived novelty and perceived value are equally subjective, as insofar as what's new to you might not be new to me, and what's valuable to me might not be valuable to you. So I suppose that even using the term perceived by definition involves a subjectivity. And so I would argue that adding a third criterion isn't that big an issue, in principle at least, if we accept that the first two criteria themselves are actually subjective and are context specific.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to see how you could not include that. It feels like a huge part of the guidelines is like coming through anthropology, right? I have my own lens. It feels like if that had been missing from the program, it would have just been a huge miss. Yeah, I think it's essential.
And then when we go back to, let's say, an educational environment, when we're trying to cultivate higher levels of, or at least architect a culture of creativity, let's say, across different domains and disciplines. And it may well be that certain disciplines lend themselves more or afford us greater opportunities to stir the creative capacity or juices of people. When we're talking about creativity, should ethics be one of those kind of key entry points into the discussion, the same way as novelty and perceived value is?
Yeah, and I think it needs to be foundational, right? Like it needs to be part of early discussions of building programs. It needs to be introduced to the group early on because you need to set it up as that group held concept, as that agreed upon group thing. Thinking of it as like a entry, like it's not an exam, right? You don't give everyone an ethics test, but agreeing upon some of the boundaries and the goal. I mean, really, right? Ethics, we talk, it's for betterment. So how do we make sure the things that we're doing are for betterment? How do we make sure we're not doing harm? These things are important for what are the goals of what will your students be doing in the world? You're hoping they're going to make it better. So what can you put in place that helps them make that betterment in the world with the avenue that they're pursuing in their educational disciplines? So it's almost a disservice not to help them with that and to provide those structures. And again, they're discussable. Students can push on them. And that's part of the learning process, is to push on something and to see what happens. And then sometimes pushing on things shows you the value in them and the reason for them. So it's an important discussion to be able to have and consider.
Well, that's definitely my word of the day now, discussables. I love that word. I'm definitely going to start using that. And that is so, I think it's really fundamental to be able to have those discussions in a constructive way, whereby it isn't simply a debate. It isn't just one person trying to win. It's a zero sum game. That's not a zero sum game, that you're trying to co-construct this kind of understanding. And I think even in tech, and because you work in Google, but around social media, for example, whereby you have certain organizations in social media who are very successful, who are what they're producing is very creative in terms of that it's new and it is offering value to a lot of people in different ways. But at the same time, we can see a lot of potential drawbacks with it, the whole existing in the attention economy nowadays, and a lot of some of the negative health outcomes that are emerging, particularly amongst younger teenagers. And where that fits in then in that debate around the ethics of technological creativity. And I suppose as well, when we talk about artificial intelligence and in the future, we've got, automated cars and how we ethically program them to make decisions in real time, because they're going to have to make difficult decisions if we have all these different dilemma scenarios played out there. So I suppose that my question is then, how, what's the best way to approach that without stifling students, crazy bonkers ideas that they might come up with without straight away saying, hold on, but that might be wrong.
Yeah, definitely. When you have this, high level thought process where you can think about all of these things, I think that's fine. I think, allow them to think of things of, what about all of these things can we do with the car if it makes these decisions to, I don't want to go into terrible examples. But I think the thought process level is okay. And then what you do is you bring in ethics and you say, yes, okay, what about if we did that? What about if we programmed a car so that it just did this thing? Let's continue that thought, keep moving with that. What's our end result? What happens eventually? And this is where the discussion of ethics comes in to that creativity. Like, well, now we've done this, and what does this result in? What does that mean? And now, you know, it's a little bit lazy to not start applying ethics at that point, right? Like, because there's all kinds of things we can do with inventions and technology. And if we leave the ethics out, it's so much easier, right? So don't take that easy path, right? Bring that other side in and say, now what tweaks do we need to make? Now what needs to happen to make sure that we're still bringing betterment into the world? And I think it's the more creative person who can bring amazing things into being and still adhere to this group accepted ethics.
And it may be, I'm just thinking out loud now, but it may be that sometimes people talk about a great way of stimulating creativity is to impose certain boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, we did a workshop recently where the facilitator said, okay, so imagine every single car in the world has to be yellow. You know, and so what are the implications of that? What's the good, the bad, the interesting, the possibilities around it? And so perhaps by introducing, let's say they do the students might engage in divergent thinking where they're just brainstorming all sorts of ideas, coming up with as many different ideas as they possibly can before they toss those ideas into this colander where we have the filters of novelty, the filters of value, and the filters of ethics into them. Perhaps those boundaries, those filters may actually produce a richer, a more creative outcome that is more impactful. And then I think also what you were touching on a bit there was almost that from the anthropological side of things, perhaps the intergroup dimension going on, you know, so what's good for one group might not be good for another group. So we see it in conflicts, whether that's, you know, the Manhattan Project. Some people would argue that was super creative. Other people would say it wasn't. I know back in the, I think back in the mid 90s, there was an interesting, it was a rumor that was had, but it was taken very seriously that the Israeli military were, or Secret Service were spiking or contaminating chewing gum in Egypt with aphrodisiac to corrupt the younger students in Egypt. And, you know, the argument that is this, you know, from their perspective, would that be something that's creative as from an intergroup perspective? It would be damaging one group and therefore making one and the other group in a more powerful position vis-a-vis the group that's being damaged. So I think we see then that, you know, is creativity fundamentally a socio-cultural phenomenon, that it can't be considered outside a socio-cultural perspective or context?
That's a really interesting question. Is creativity bound to some kind of social? I don't think so. I think creativity can exist on it. I mean, I think creativity does exist in an individual basis. Interesting. I think no. That's a tough one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. These conversations are so fascinating, how we can try and tease things out. When we were talking about, let's say, fostering creativity in education, so clearly we can see this massive importance of bringing an ethical angle to it, which isn't discussed enough for sure. And I think your contribution is amazing on that front. And then you're talking about creating this kind of safe space where someone can feel comfortable being vulnerable by, you know, and that could be generating ideas that might be controversial even, but they are discussables, as you said. And you mentioned the idea of, so there needs to be this connection between the different people in the group where you have this safety, you have this understanding, this mutual respect, and a sense of play as well, I think you touched upon. Are there other conditions in a learning environment that you think are really crucial in order to ensure that that we're creating a culture of creativity?
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up the big ones, I think, with the play, the openness, the ability to be vulnerable, which implies the need for safety. I think, you know, the variety that needs to come in, you're going to get much more creative ideas when you have, you know, different types of people with different experiences. I think those are the major ones. And then, you know, every group kind of, it's going to be a little different with each group because of the nature of creativity. And, you know, you can put, you know, different groups of 10 people in different rooms and give them the same environment, you know, same environments, and they're going to come up with totally different things, which is the amazing thing. So, you know, this space for the unexpected to come up and the willingness to be interested in that differentness. I think being able to reflect as well is an important part of being able to keep creativity going. You know, think about why something totally different came up. What does that mean for the group? You know, how did they respond to the differentness? You know, just because you're in a creative environment doesn't mean every idea is going to be, celebrated by the group, right? Things might come up that the group rejects and the individual might have to defend their idea. And again, bringing in the safety to say, you are defending your idea, but this is okay. You know, we're not going to attack you for it. And that needs to be, that's something the moderator needs to be able to do. If controversial ideas come up, they need to be able to say, well, let's hear a little more, so the group needs to be able to, it's not all going to be a happy, wonderful thing. There will be things that come up that are scary ideas, maybe. But being able to talk about why are we rejecting this idea? And maybe it's correct to reject the idea, right? Maybe it violates our ethical standards. Maybe it's illegal. But let's talk about that and what that means and kind of come to maybe not come to group consensus. Maybe that's too hard. But come to the point where we've agreed on, we've seen the points and we've viewed it and we've considered it.
And so do you think that perhaps the rise in cancel culture or call out culture in recent years, particularly in higher education, actually runs the risk of stifling creativity?
You are bringing in such tricky issues. Yeah, cancel culture is really taking off. And I do believe that it stifles creativity. So the answer to that question is yes. I believe the fear of being canceled can stifle some creativity. Is cancel culture, I think the term itself makes it problematic. I think there are incidents where a person needs to be removed from a group. I think there are times when that formal process needs to happen. The group votes upon it on social media aspect is problematic and I think adds to fear, which is going to repress vulnerability, which is going to reduce creativity, which means overall, I think groups will be at a disadvantage with this, I'll say runaway cancel culture that seems to be happening. I mean, I certainly think very carefully before I post something because I don't want suddenly people to, and you know, it can get quite vicious. Aside from losing your job, there's, you know, just being terrorized online is pretty, they get into all kinds of, they can find out where you live. And this is a really runaway, way of dealing with people stepping outside of group boundaries, right? It's gone a bit far.
Yeah, I think that idea of kind of undiluted, unchecked, unbridled, mm-hmm. Unquestioned cancel culture is definitely problematic. And so as we come to the end of discussion, and it's so interesting, I just think, you know, the whole ethical side of things is just fascinating. So were you to have, I know you've talked about it, the safe environment, the play, the connection, the reflection, the curiosity, I think, that we want to stimulate in our students. So were you to have a magic wand, what changes might you make in an educational environment to try and stimulate enhanced creativity or greater creativity?
Yeah, I would bring in more intentionally that idea of connections with other disciplines. The way education works in the United States, and I suspect Dublin as well, Ireland as well, the higher you get up in education, the more you focus in on a particular topic and you get that really laser focus. And I really loved what we called in American colleges in the first year or two, you take general ed classes and you are required to take classes outside of your major. But then as you move upwards, you stop doing that. But I was very lucky in my graduate program. I was required to take three classes outside the discipline of anthropology. And I love that that was built in. And I think that that needs to be built into more programs. I think it's not common. It was a particular requirement because I was in what's called an applied program. And so that was part of, you know, what are you going to apply this to? You need to have formal education in that area as well. So that's why it was there. But I don't know that that shouldn't be part of other disciplines as well. And whether it's, you know, requiring them to take three whole classes is perhaps too much for certain fields. But Why not have, you know, classes where you meet, you co-teach one class per semester with another class that's going on, and you talk about the issues in your field, talk about the ethics in your different fields, or talk about, the problems that are happening in that field, and just get the groups together so that you have that cross-disciplinary thought process. At least there's that kernel of an idea that, you know, this department thinks about something differently than our department.
Absolutely. So the idea that the friction that emerges at the point of intersection between different disciplines is the friction that polishes that diamond.
Beautifully said. Yes. Yeah.
So that we can, so that you construct something that is genuinely creative. That's brilliant. Kelly, look, that really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for your perspectives, for raising some of the big, big questions around creativity and really constructing a very compelling argument for why, you know, ethics and creativity are so intimately combined, and the study thereof therefore should be a study that involves both of them on an ongoing basis. So thank you so much for being part of the Crania podcast. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you for the tough questions. I appreciate those.
You're very welcome.
This was another episode of Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast.
In this series, we talk to academic experts on creativity, creative practitioners, people from the creative industries and the arts, and those working across disciplines and at the boundaries between scholarship and practice.
The aim of these conversations is to dig into creativity, to figure out what it means, and above all, to explore ways to encourage it in any field or discipline.
The Cranier Project is based at Dublin City University and is funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education.